Nigeria Info.
That's correct. It is the Morning Crossfire. This is 99.3 Nigeria Info. It is the last lap of the show. Welcome. I told you since 5 a.m. what we're talking about now, so it's a good time to get closer to your radio set and also join us on Facebook and YouTube. It's Nigeria Info 99.3. You can leave us your thoughts right there on the conversation. My name is Wemimo Adewuni. Today we're talking about psychosocial support for child rape victims. Possibly would be a very touchy conversation, but it needs to be had, and you need to know what to do in those circumstances. We need to pay attention to those rape victims who appear to be at risk of social marginalization, especially child victims. Now, according to research, the rape is carried out not just peculiarly to girls hawking on the street like we used to know back then. It's now in every nook and cranny. Even right now in your house, you need to know what's going on. It's even now perpetrated by those that you trust. And close neighbors, uncles, pastors, imams, teachers, fathers. There's a story I'm following up. Someone just sent to me, a teacher molested a two-year-old child. So you need to watch out. Now, reports have shown that sometimes a victim, especially the children, are cajoled and deceitfully taken advantage of. Sometimes it's forceful, sometimes it's violent, and it leaves, whatever form it takes, it leaves a victim physically and psychologically bruised and scarred, many times for life. Right now, look at this data from Amnesty International. There's a report that was released last month titled "A Harrowing Journey: Access to Justice for Women and Girls Survivors of Rapes." That report shows us that there were 11,200 rape cases reported last year, including children that were raped to death. I hope that sinks. Now, also the reports, which is based on research carried out between March 2020 and August 2021, with interviews conducted in Abuja, Lagos, Kano, Sokoto, and Bauchi State, also revealed, and I quote now, "Stigma and victim blaming are key factors hindering the reporting of rape. Children who are increasingly becoming targets of sexual violence face particular challenges in reporting these crimes because of a lack of reporting process that is child-friendly." It also says if police fail to investigate, sexual violence deprives survivors of justice. If the police fail to investigate this violence, certainly the survivors have no justice, the parents have no closure, everyone is just held hanging. Now, there's data also from the Nigeria Police Force which shows that the number of females that experienced rape and sexual abuse in 2017 was 18 out of all 26 cases reported. In 2018 and 2019, 62 and 59 cases were reported respectively, of which the number of females were 60 and 56 persons respectively, meaning that in most cases, most of the cases were women, just a handful were otherwise. Now, earlier on in November, I had a conversation here about psychosocial disability. We looked at psychosocial issues for people living with disability. We had mental health advocate here in the studio to discuss it, if you remember very well. Today, we're looking at psychosocial support for child rape victims. And my guest is right here. She's Dr. Omobolawa Akonde Akiyemi. She's a senior resident doctor at the Federal Neuropsychiatric Hospital in Yaba. Good to have you here, ma'am. Good morning.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Now, you can join us live on Facebook and YouTube so you can see her lovely face and mine, and also tell us your thoughts about the conversation. Again, if, when you call in, if you want to stay anonymous, just say so, all right? You don't have to say your name if you have a question or a comment to make. Now, Let's start by talking about psychosocial support. So we've talked about it earlier on, that was last month, but for those who might have missed it, what do we mean by psychosocial support?
Okay, psychosocial support for any condition just is a compound term to talk about the psychological and the social support for people that have a condition. In this case, people that have experienced childhood rape or sexual assault would need a whole gamut of interventions, ranging from the medical interventions to psychological interventions like counseling, like specific therapies, to social interactions given either by the government or non-governmental organizations, family members, and the community at large. So these are psychosocial interventions are non-biological interventions that are that encompasses the treatment and management for people that have experienced childhood sexual abuse.
Right.
And it's very essential. And it's because most of the impacts, there are physical impacts like sexually transmitted infections, like pregnancies, like trauma and all of that. But the long-lasting impacts from childhood sexual abuse tend to be of a psychological and social nature. The complications from childhood sexual abuse, some of the complications you might see is for the patients, they might, even if they do not come down with psychiatric disorders, they do have grief reactions, they have anxiety reactions, they have sadness, they have relationship problems and all of that as a result. And a lot of them do end up coming down with psychological and psychiatric disorders, and they just have social problems. You know, a father that raped a child, where is this child going to stay?
Yeah.
Family issues, academic issues. So the management of people that have experienced childhood sexual abuse is multi-sectorial and multidisciplinary. It's not just done by health professionals or social workers. It's the whole community, the whole society that has to be involved in providing support for them.
Thank you very much. I mean, that sums it up, because it's psychological and it's social. That means the family and the community also have to be involved. Unfortunately, our general understanding of rape in our society isn't no, it's not there yet. So there's this idea of the first question is always, why were you there? You know,
what were you
doing? What were you wearing? And in the case of a child, I mean, like I said in the introduction, reporting the matter at first is first the issue, because a child possibly doesn't even know how to call the private part by their names, doesn't know how to describe what happened to them. In the case where there's threats, this is an adult, possibly, and a child, you know. So all of that trauma ongoing, and possibly when the parents find out, they possibly find out suddenly. Some parent is very funny. It's very ridiculous. It's not funny. It's ridiculous. Blame the child. So in this case, yeah. How does a child? I mean, I'm looking at this from the standpoint of the child.
It's very difficult, you know, because rape can happen from even before the child can speak. And before the child can understand. And even if the child does appear to be mature physically, that doesn't mean that they are psychologically able to articulate or understand the impact. And the truth about it is that these abusers are very skilled. And they are usually repeat offenders. So they know how to, number one, threaten the child into a way that the child will be unable to tell them. I've had my patients say that they told me that, I would kill your mother, or, you know, I would kill you. I will kill everyone. And the child might not be able to believe them, you know, because this is an authority figure. So, and it's, sometimes the children cannot even articulate. They don't know it's wrong. Other times, they try to cajole the children by maybe giving them sweets and all of that. And so that the children, even when they become older, they now start to make it seem it is their fault, that, it's your fault that this is happening to you and all of that. And I've actually seen parents in certain cases blame the sufferer, the victim, and saying, why is it you? And all of that. And then the person starts to internalize it. It's very common in my patients that they'll say things like, oh, maybe it's something I did, or maybe because I was too friendly, maybe I sat down on this uncle's lap, and maybe because I wanted to get close to this teacher and all of that. So there's a way that it's called grooming. The person transfers the guilt and the responsibility for the heinous act from this authority figure to the person that is actually a victim. So it's always very difficult. What we do try to do is, I think, thank God for increasing awareness. You know, in schools, they are teaching people, they are teaching teachers, and all of that, in religious organizations, but there is still so much to be done. Children must know their private parts. They must know them by their right names. They must know what is appropriate behavior. And our parents must be extremely vigilant. You know, for children, they might not be able to talk, but there are certain signs in children that might tell you that, okay, maybe this child is at risk of being abused or is undergoing abuse or being groomed. If you see your child being uncomfortable with any adult, male or female, for any reason,
yes,
then you must not let that child stay alone with that person. And then, you know, because of our culture of trying to please all these family members, you say, oh, you don't like this person, you must go and sit down with that person or must go and talk to him. And then by that time, you are now indirectly giving this person authority. Then the person will say, hey, your mother says you must do what I want to do.
Yes.
Your mother does not like that. You're not friendly with me. And then you're giving power to another. So that's one issue. Then there's also the issue of transferring. There are some children that are vulnerable by virtue of socioeconomic class, extremes of age, people in dire social circumstances, people that do not live with their parents, you know, their financial issues, or go and stay with this uncle, go and stay with this auntie, or mom is too busy, go stay with this in this house until I come back from work. So those are the things that increase the risk of a child being abused, you know, being outside the nuclear family setting.
Yeah.
So as much as possible, I know it's protective for your child to live with you and only you. So those are some of the things. And reducing external times, you know, holiday periods is a peak period for abuse, you know.
Yes.
The parent, the children are not in school, then you try to find alternative childcare arrangements.
Yes.
Sometimes with an uncle or in some lessons and all of that. So as much as possible, the most important thing is to prevent it as much as possible and be vigilant. If you see your child, and in children, depending on the presentation of childhood sexual abuse differs according to the age. A child that is not verbal or not talking, very able to communicate concepts, might not be able to say, I'm being raped. You just say, I don't like that uncle.
Yeah.
They might start having nightmares. They might have what we call regression, you know.
Yeah.
A child that was not bedwetting will start bedwetting.
And you start caning that child for bedwetting.
Child.
Compounding the matter.
Or the child that is able to do certain things is just suddenly so clingy, wanting to follow you everywhere, having weepy spells, not eating well. Those are the ways that should have you thinking, okay, what's going on? Once there's a change in your child's behavior, your child was bubbling and outgoing. Mm. That's one of the signs that, oh, this child used to be so bubbling and outgoing.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden, this child is withdrawn and crying and not wanting. Then in older children, you can see it in anger outbursts.
Mm.
And then, you know, that because of that, you now start reacting to the child or poor academic performance.
Yeah.
And then, or the child in a bid to escape from the abuse that might be at home might start experiencing truancy. Or if it's in school, the child might now start refusing to go to school, you understand? So you should be very, very aware. So you should have an open relationship with your children. And so that they can communicate with you when they are. They might not even know. You know, children might just know that I just don't like this person or it's just too clingy. And they might not be able to articulate
what the problem is.
So when you see that with your children, your job as a teacher is to draw that child closer, be nicer, you know, don't be so critical. So that at that point in time, a lot of times you're beginning to see a lot of teachers, a lot of church workers being able to detect it, you know, and all of that. So when you see your child acting out, don't punish the behavior as much as possible. Try and find out
the cause of that behavior. You have nailed it on the head. Totally. I mean, I can close this show and go home right now, because you've touched on practically everything. When holiday season, a lot of people are traveling, you know, it's festive season, all the family members are possibly together, it's a full house. Every child is supposed to be free with every adult. You know, most parents are not watching out because they are with their family members, extended family members, people that they trust. Now, in the instance that something happens to a child, we've said that some children are nonverbal. Unfortunately, in our society, there's a way we expect children to behave. And if they don't behave in that certain way, the only reaction is to punish that behavior until they behave the way we want them to behave. I have my children tell me, it was really funny. That was like 3 weeks ago. I was upset. You know, when you tell a child, do this, I've said it about 5 times. You know, and then I raised my voice, and my son, 5 years old, said, but mom, did you have to say it so angrily? Sorry, but I've been telling you. Okay, sorry. But most parents don't, we don't allow children to verbalize. We see them as an extension of ourselves and that they must do everything we want them to do at that time. So let's speak to parents and, of course, teachers and, of course, guardians. There's a place to draw a line, or is there a place to draw a line between a child who's being overbearing, arrogant and naughty and a child who's trying to pass a message?
Well, I think it's all children are different, and I'm a firm advocate in discipline, but I believe that you must have that relationship with your child. So if you have a child that, you know, is behaves in a particular way, you know why they behave that particular way, and then you understand when their behavior deviates from what is normal. And if you know, okay, my child throws a tantrum, but when I say this, or this is what terminates this tantrum, or my child does this only once in a while, but then it's not becoming an episodic thing. Part of being parenting is being psychologically aware.
Yeah,
you understand, you have to understand that these children might not be able to regulate their emotions the way
adults
we do,
but
that they have reasons for what they do. A child that is, you know, throwing a tantrum, as I always say, sometimes they bring this child. We in child psychiatry, there's a statement we say that disorders in the family show up in the child. So when you see a child acting out, it's as a result of things in the environment, and that child's behavior is typically just a symptom of something that is going on in the home, in the environment, and in the school. So don't, and sometimes we shouldn't expect our children to behave like little adults. They are at a different level. They will be, and there should be some allowance. So that is why when we have become aware of the different stages of child development, your child is a 5-year-old and wants to sit down on your lap, it's normal. You should not, it's if you're seeing a 10-year-old child that cannot, then you should know, okay, that those things. And then when you're not sure of whether or not this behavior is appropriate or not, seek medical interventions. 95% of the people that come to the hospital with their children, we just tell them, oh, this is normal, this is an acting out phase, this is a this. This child does not have a diagnosis. Just one or two things you have to correct, you understand. Yeah. It's only very few of the children that do actually, but it's good to have a professional's
check up
when you are not sure of what is going on. We are parents who want what's best for our kids, but we might not have the tools to help them. And that's why we need to seek professional help.
Right. We have a criminal and penal codes in Nigeria. I mean, they are not your face. Not the look on your face when I mentioned that. We have the criminal and the penal code. Recently, maybe we should be happy. In Jigawa State, the Child Rights Act was passed. Unfortunately, it covers child protection, but says nothing about the marriageable age of a child. I'll talk about that when I come back. We need to go out on a break. This is the Morning Crossfire, 99.3 Nigeria Info. I'll start from here when we come back. I want to see that look on your face again. Remember, you can join the show live on Facebook and YouTube, Nigeria Info 99.3. You can leave us your thoughts there. You can also make use of the phone lines when I return, and that's 0700 993 993 993. Female callers will have a line for you. It's 01465 7190. Remember, you can stay anonymous if you want, if you have a thorough question to ask. Questions that cannot be diagnosed over the radio, I've told you since last week, dress up and go to the hospital, okay? But we'll talk to you again when I come back from the break. I'm Wemimo Adewuni. Stay here. I'll be right back. And now we are back. This is 99.3 Nigeria Info. Welcome to the Money Crossfire. 99.3 Nigeria Info. You need to put up the radio in your car. Can you hear me? Yes. Thank you. Perfect. Okay. So if you're just joining us, we're talking about psychosocial support for child rape victims. And we've looked at the impact of rape on children. Very gruesome. Rape on anybody, male or female, adult or a child. Now, put off that radio. It's awful. But if you then look at children, because they are younger, it's a bit more difficult for them to convey what they're going through. And the impact is both on the child and sometimes also on the parents. Before I go to the phone lines, Doctor, let's talk about the impact. Can you put off the radio in your car? Can you hear me? Oh, okay. Give it a minute. It's right here. It's from my end. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it was from my end. It was muted. Okay. So let's talk about the impact on the parents. So when it happens to children, I'm looking at children who are possibly non-verbal, even those who are verbal, you know, the societal stigma. A lot of parents want, I've taken up quite a number of cases. At the end of the day, the parents tell you, let's just leave it alone. You know, this child is still young. She will forget or he will forget. But if we put it in the, if we take this person to court, the news is always, it will be over the internet. Everyone will know that when she was a child, you know, her picture, stuff like that. How do parents manage, you know, this situation? It also affects them.
Okay, so, childhood sexual abuse has implications for the parents. I'll give different parents react in different ways. And some parents are negligent. There's no two ways about it. Mm-hmm. And those are very, very few. Most parents, you know, they have to go through the five stages of grief. You know, there's first, there's denial. No, it can't be. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when they're going through that denial, it now makes the child now clamp up, you know, and refuse to speak because, you know, no, you can't. I've had someone that it was her brother that was living with the family that was responsible for the sexual assault of the child. So there was first denial. And in this point in time, the mother was even telling the child, I do want to break up your home, my home, you know, and all of that. And so sometimes there can be anger, you know. Some parents will get angry, confront the person. And sometimes with that anger, the child might not understand that the anger is not directed at them.
Yes.
So you have to be careful about your reactions. So what I always tell them is that you're going to be processing a lot of your own as a parent, a whole lot of emotions, you know. But you shouldn't expose your child to that because it's going to now complicate what's going on in that child's own headspace.
Right, yeah.
They'll see you sad, they'll see you angry, and they'll think it's their fault. So as much as possible, that parent too needs psychological interventions. And sometimes, you know, it might even be the parent or the primary caregiver that is the perpetrator. So how do you now manage that? So sometimes it might lead to the fact that the parents have to separate, you know. And there's financial issues. Children have to change schools. So those are some of the... So when abuse is going on, it's not just a one-time thing. It has far-reaching implications. The child, the parents have to separate. I've had cases where it was the father that was the perpetrator, and then we had to take... The mother refused to leave the marriage.
Wow.
And then this innocent child, yes, had to end up in a foster home.
Wow.
Lagos State.
Wow.
Foster home. Yes. It's so it can be
wait. Hold up. Their own children?
Yeah, it was a daughter, yes. So the mother said, I have four other children for this person. I have no job. How am I going to train? And looking at that situation, it was
goodness.
Now decided for the benefit. So it has far reaching psychological, and the facilities are not there, because this girl I'm talking about ended up in one of the homes. And you know, there are different types of children in these homes.
Yeah.
There are children that are there because they've committed crime,
yes.
Children that are homeless,
yeah.
And then psychologically it was very, very draining for this child.
And then you mix her up with all of those.
And so by the time she was even saying, I'm not even interested. My father didn't do anything. I'm not, you understand?
She's because home was better than where she currently is.
So those are some of the social issues. Another issue that we face that is very difficult is the way sometimes the police handles these issues. Thank God, I would give credit that Lagos State is trying with the Lagos State Sexual Violence Response
Team.
Unit. They are trying. Team. But sometimes when you meet policemen, I've had an experience where there was this person that was a serial offender grooming a large number of kids in an in a neighborhood. And then they went to the police. And then the police, because these people were from a very low socioeconomic class, the police were like, in the next, I heard the police was a policewoman who said, yeah, aren't you all prostitutes? What were you doing around him? That was what she said. And then made another statement that very soon you're going to be doing it for free anyways. So why are you
What does it matter? Oh my goodness.
What does it matter? This was a 13-year-old girl.
Oh my goodness.
And sometimes they are the ones that push the relatives that, oh, just take money and let this case die. Just let this case die. So... So these are some of the issues that we experience. So, and so there's this lack of support. Dealing with, if we want to be serious about providing psychosocial support, there should be facilities. Where is a mother with five children who the primary, the main source of support, financial support, is the abuser, or his stepdad? Where is she going to go? So there's a lot that has to be done by government, by non-governmental organizations, by NGOs, to provide these facilities that will... Because it's one thing for abuse to occur once. It's a different thing if it continues to occur. The damage is even more catastrophic than if the person is kept in that situation having repeated abuse. Yeah. Then powerlessness occurs, and then all of that. So,
let me take a few calls. My phone lines have been buzzing. The next few minutes before we leave, we'll take some calls and hear you. Remember, if you want to stay anonymous, that's fine. Just tell me once you call. The number is 0700-993-993-993. Female callers is 01465-7190. Good morning. Hello.
Hello.
Good morning. You're welcome. Okay. Do you want to stay anonymous?
Good morning, Wemi. How are you doing today?
I'm okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for this topic you brought up, because so many families are actually going through terrible time. I want you to, before I start saying what I want to say, I want you to please at your own time Google Adebayo Gbadebo at Isolog Primary School, Alabole. This particular guy raped molested close to 11 girls from different families in 2019. Hello?
I can hear you. Go ahead.
Yes. In 2019, April precisely, the owners of the school, one Isaac Ogundipe and the wife, tried to cover up this case. Up to today, some parents, only two parents, were able to drag the case to court. But as I speak to you, the court in Ogun State, whether they are trying to bury the case or not, there has not been any headway since 2019.
Are you talking about the Adebayo Gbadebo? I see is a footballer. Are you talking about
the same
person?
Google Foot Primary School on it. Adebayo Gbadebo. Isolog Primary School. Can you put it? Can you see?
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead quickly, because of time.
Yes. Okay. So he was the perpetrator. And the only two parents were able to summon courage. Others were dragged out by the owners of the school. Because the last victim was kept in the school hostel and was being treated by the owner of the school without telling the parents.
But this matter is still in court now, right?
Yes. Yeah, the
children that were allegedly raped, did they receive any kind of support? Any kind of psychological support from the hospital?
Yeah, the Teteyera tried to give, but you know, it's under Ogun State. They could, apart from Lagos State government, there's no other government anywhere that takes this case seriously.
Unfortunately, so I cannot disagree with you. We can say on this matter that the Lagos State government is doing very, very well. I know this for one. It's not 100%, but it's appreciably a very high percentage. Other states, I cannot speak for them. I don't know what's going on. Unfortunately, in those states, if something happens, you might just be on your own. And like we've all said, even the police, I think I might need to just take this matter up again. Even the police, we're not certain that they're well-trained in managing rape issues, especially for children. Good morning.
Hello,
good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, you're welcome.
Yeah.
What's your... All right, please go ahead.
Good morning. Good morning to the doctor in the house.
Good morning.
Hello?
We can hear you.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
We can hear
Please, I just want to ask for about my daughter. My daughter is just 11 years old. Okay. 11 years and 4 months.
Okay.
And she started menstruating the 1st of this month.
Okay.
And I don't know. And she's still in primary school. She's in primary 5 to be precise.
Okay.
And I don't know. Well, can I talk to her about sex or... Because I don't know how to handle her.
Yeah. Okay. Doctor?
Okay. Yes, you should. Even before she starts to see her first period,
yeah.
From age, you start to talk it as early as the child, when you are bathing the child at age 3. Yeah. You start to tell them certain, start pointing out parts of their body that nobody should touch. These are private areas. So by you've gone to that, to them, so that they even have openness to tell you, someone touched me here, someone said this about that. Mm. But by age 8, 11, you should, the child should know. At least I know that in my daughter in primary school, they've taught her the reproductive system,
yeah.
They've taught her pregnancy. You should tell her all about that. You should tell her what to do. What there's, as in their books. I remember there used to be a book by Noam Teodukoya.
Yes, absolutely.
A lot of resources.
I think it's still available. Oh, if you don't also know where to get the book, just go online. I tell you guys, I've been saying this all morning, maximize your internet. Search for age-appropriate sex education. For every child range, for every age group, there is age-appropriate. It's not everything that's appropriate at a certain age. So even though she has started menstruating at 11, it's not everything she needs to know now. There's something she should have known before now. And there's so many things she should have known before now, and there's some things she should know now. So go online, just search sex education for children, age appropriate. You'll find something to guide you. Let's speak to Bola, okay. Who's here from where? Cyril Ray, I believe. Okay, I get it. Good morning, hello.
Yeah.
You're welcome to the show.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning, I can hear you.
Am I on the show live right now?
Yes, you are. My name is Wemimo, welcome.
Okay, Wemimo, good morning.
Good morning.
Please, what's the name of the doctor in the house? Please, what's the name, please?
Dr. Omobolawa Akinyemi.
Omobolawa Akinyemi?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so, doctor, I have this present issue. This conversation today is just like as if it's around me. So, okay. I have this present issue concerning my wife. So, she developed... when we had our first baby, she had what the doctors called the postpartum depression and psychosis. Yes.
Okay.
So we took her to the hospital. She was at the hospital, and then she was diagnosed of that. So she had the psychiatric care and all that in a private facility where she gave birth, actually. So I started finding out what could have caused it and all that. So I saw that a lot of social factors that affected it. I guess my wife had, because she wasn't, her dad was late, so she was staying with a aunt, and then she was being molested by one of her cousins in the house. And then a lot of things, you know, not being able to take care of her properly, and then disparity between the way she was being
treated,
brought up, and the way the other children were being brought up.
Mm.
So right now, she's actually, so after that, she has had about 2 episodes. And right now, she's having a 3rd episode right now. Now, I have issues with her family because they are trying to, they don't want the stigma of the fact that our child is having a mental issue. And then the fact that also when we got married, she got pregnant for me initially.
Okay.
Before I went ahead to say that I was ready to marry her. So they are still holding that against me and all that.
So they think it's your fault she has a mental illness?
Yes. So, now they try to say, oh, it's my fault that you got her
just,
pregnant.
Just blank them out. You need to blank them out.
Blank them.
Yeah,
that's it. Well, it's not so easy.
No, it's not so easy, but it's what has to be done.
Because when my wife has that episode, I won't be able, because my wife will start acting out and then I have to get them involved.
Okay, so do you have a question for the doctor? Do you want her to help you?
Yeah, the question I have for the doctor is, I don't know how to manage them. The issue, because right now, she's having an episode and she's with her family. And
why is she not at the hospital?
Because they said there's nothing wrong with her, that she's under. I'm stressing her.
Okay. Okay. I have 1 minute to go. Can you answer him very quickly?
All I have to say is please come to where I work, Federal Neuropsychiatric Hospital, Yaba. Mm-hmm. You will need family therapy. Apart from medications and all of that, you need to have special therapy, because if you do not address these family matters properly, it's going to worsen the cause of this illness.
Yeah.
And it's something with a couple of sessions, they should come to understand the nature of illness, what caused it, and how to better take care of her.
Tell them you are taking them out for Christmas hangouts and drive them to the Federal Neuropsychiatric Hospital.
I know it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that.
Just saying.
Tell them that if they want, that it's not all about medications, that she might need some therapy, some talking to, she's been under stress, a lot of psychological issues, and that having a trained therapist might help her walk through those issues.
Okay, we're totally out of time now, but please, and I think he had called before, please, I wanted to go to the Federal Neuropsychiatric Hospital Yaba and get clearer ways to handle the situation. I know that that's why we're talking psychosocial. That social part is very, very important also.
Very
but
important.
I need to go. We possibly have a second round of this conversation. I want to say a big thank you to Dr. Omobolawa Akonde Akinyemi. Thank you so much for joining the show today.
It's always a pleasure to be here. Lovely day.
Thank you. And you too. I'll see you tomorrow at 5 a.m. guys. Make sure you have a fabulous day. If you came for the dinner, the links of the photos are ready. I've sent them to your mail addresses, so you can find them there. The link expires very soon, so get the photos you need urgently. I'm on social media at Wemimo Sport. I'll see you tomorrow at 5 a.m. Go get help if you need it. Go to the hospital, ask questions, and find the help you desire. All right, I'll see you later. Have a good day.
From all of us here at 99.3 Nigeria Info, have a merry, merry Christmas.
99.3 Nigeria Info. We are more than just radio. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at Nigeria Info FM. Check us out on Facebook at Nigeria Info 99.3. Follow us on Twitter at Nigeria Info FM and on Instagram at Nigeria Info FM Lagos for live updates as it happens. 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.